Keneb sent Bulge off to finish striking his command tent and rode through the breaking camps of the 9th Company. Soldiers stopped talking to watch him ride past. There was none of the usual banter, suggesting to Keneb that the tale of the incident at Gessler's camp had bled out among the ranks. Whatever had happened, it looked bad. It'd be nice to get some good news, for a change. The High Mage has opened us a warren that'll take us right to wherever it is the adjunct wants us. A lovely warren, rolling fields of flowers and gambling deer that fall dead at our feet whenever we get hungry. Water? No, the rivers are rivers of wine. Ground soft as pillows every night, too. It's great. Oh, and when we get there, the enemy take one look at us and drop their weapons and send for wagons loaded with the booty of a king's vault. And the women, why...
Keneb!
He turned in his saddle to see Blistig riding up from a side avenue. The man fell in alongside him.
The morning's turned into Hood's Hall, Keneb. What else did you hear?
About what? Got called to the 9th, 5th squad. That's all I know.
Gessler and Stormy have deserted.
There was a glint in Blistig's eyes.
Ridiculous. The word's gone out, right out. The whole damned army knows it now. She's losing it, Keneb, and none too soon as far as I'm concerned. We ain't gonna hold for this march across the wastelands. She'll have to disband us. I liked the look of Letharas. How about you?
Gessler and Stormy have not deserted, Blistig.
You said you knew nothing.
I don't have to. I know those two. They're solid as mountains.
They're gone, Keneb. Simple as that.
You were summoned to this meeting?
Not officially, but it sounds to be army's business.
It concerns a squad in one of my companies, Blistig. Do me a favor. Ride the fuck back to your legion and get them in order. If new commands are going to come down, leave it to the adjunct staff. If she wanted you, she'd have invited you. The man's face darkened.
You've turned into a real shit, Keneb. Don't settle in Letharas. The city ain't big enough for both of us.
Go away, Blistig.
Once we're disbanded, I'm coming looking for you, Keneb.
The day that happens, Blistig, you won't make it out of your legion's camp. They'll cut you down not 2 steps from your tent.
Shows what you know. I got rapport. They'll be at my back when I go for you.
Keneb glanced over, brows lifting. Rapport? You're a joke, Blistig. You're their joke. Now get out of my face.
Not a chance. I'm off to talk with the adjunct.
Talk? About what?
My business.
They drew closer to a cordon of soldiers. That ring parted as they rode in. Within the circle waited an ominous gathering. Keneb saw Tavaray and Yill along with Quick Ben, Fiddler and Bottle. His gaze then found the destroyed tent. That doesn't look good. He reined in, dismounted. A soldier from the 18th squad came forward and took the reins. Thank you, Corporal Rib. Keneb paused. Think we still need this cordon?
Only the inner ring's doing that, Fist, Rib replied. The rest are just gawking.
Get me your sergeant, Keneb said.
Aye, sir.
Smirking, Blistig moved past, heading for the adjunct. The 18th sergeant pushed through.
Fist, bad news this.
So I hear, Gaunt Eye. Now, round up the other sergeants all these soldiers belong to. I want them out of here. I want them all getting ready for the day's march. Tell them if I look up in 100 heartbeats and still see this mob, Hood's heel is coming down. Am I understood, Sergeant?
The Jennebarkin blinked.
Aye, Fist.
He saluted and then plunged back into the crowd. Almost at once he started barking orders. Corporal Rib grinned.
He don't need the other sergeants, Fist. I ain't never known a meaner sergeant.
Carry on, Corporal.
Aye, Fist.
Keneb walked over to the motley gathering. These damned, all-too-familiar faces, the miserable expressions, the adjunct's flat eyes and thin, straight mouth as she stood listening to whatever Blistig was saying. As Keneb reached them, Tavaray lifted a gauntleted hand, cutting Blistig off.
Fist Blistig, she said.
Is this the time to petition for an increase in the rum ration?
Adjunct, the 8th Legion may be about to crumble. I'm just wanting to make sure my own Legion...
That will be enough, Blistic. Return to your Legion immediately.
Very well, Adjunct. Still, who'd have thought those two would desert?
He saluted and was forced to hold it while Tavare stood motionless, her regard level and lifeless. As the moment grew uncomfortable, the adjunct returned the salute, converting it into a dismissive gesture, as if brushing lint from her cloak. Face paling, Blistig wheeled and marched back to his horse, only to find that the animal had wandered off. No one had taken the reins from him. As he hesitated, Kenab grunted and said,
"Rapport, aye."
"Not my legion," he snapped. "You might want a word or two about courtesy with your soldiers, Kenab."
"The Malazan military demands courtesy first and expects respect to follow. Lose respect and the courtesy usually goes with it."
"Remember, I'll be looking for you."
"Best find your horse first, Blistig." The adjunct gestured Kenab over.
"Fist, our camp security seems to have been breached."
"They are truly missing, adjunct?" She nodded.
"I cannot see how anyone managed to penetrate this deep into our camp," Kenab said. "Unless they were our own, but then where are the bodies? I don't understand this, adjunct."
"The High Mage suggests the attacker was a Shigal Kachain Chemal."
"A what?"
"Sometimes," Quick Ben said, "those ones grow wings. They're the matron's own assassin's fist, and one dropped down out of the night and stole them both."
"To do what with them? Eat them? Why did neither man make a sound?"
"They were selected," said the High Mage, "and no, I have no idea why."
Kenab struggled to make sense of all this. He glanced at Fiddler. The sergeant looked miserable. Well, nothing new there.
"Gessler and Stormy," he slowly ventured, "were anything but average Marines." "As close to ascendance," said Quick Ben, "as anyone in this army."
"Will this winged assassin come back for more of us?" Kenab asked, offering the question to any one of the 5 soldiers standing opposite him.
Fiddler grunted.
"Damn, that's the first time the question's come up. You got a point. Why stop with just them?" "The problem is," said Quick Ben, "we have no idea what the Chemal want with Gessler and Stormy."
"Had no real way to find out," added Bottle.
"I see," said Kenab.
"Well, how can we defend against such future attacks, High Mage?"
"I'll see what I can think up, Fist."
"One squad member with a crossbow stays awake at all times at night," said Kenab. "Maybe that won't help, but it's a start. Adjunct, if the soldiers begin thinking people can go missing at any time and we can do nothing about it, we'll end up facing a mutiny."
"You are correct, Fist. I will see to it that the order goes out." She turned. "Captain Yil, ride to the Lethary camp and report our losses. You need hold nothing back from Commander Bryce Bedict. Include in your report our conjectures."
As Lostara made to leave, Quick Ben said,
"Captain, be sure that Atricida Aranicht is present."
She nodded and then departed. The adjunct stepped close to Kenab.
"Fist, we have suffered a wound here. It may prove deeper and more serious than any of us presently believe. You may be assured that I will do all that is in my power to find and retrieve Gessler and Stormy. But understand, we must continue the march. We must hold this army together."
"Aye, adjunct. To that end, we have another problem. He was just here, in fact."
She held his gaze. "I am aware of that, Fist. I am also aware of the additional burdens you have been forced to carry as a consequence. I will deal with this matter shortly. In the meantime, we need to make certain that the rumor of Gessler and Stormy deserting is laid to rest. The truth is unpleasant enough in its own right that none will think us dissembling. Summon your officers, Fist." She then turned to her High Mage. "Do what you can to protect us."
"I will, adjunct."
"And find them, Quick Ben."
"Again, whatever I can do, I will do it."
"We cannot lose any more veterans."
She did not need to add that without them the chains of this army would snap at the first moment of trouble. Even now, one more gust of ill wind could do us all in. Gessler and Stormy, you damned idiots. Probably tossing dice in that rank tent you shared, or stitching a solid wall down the middle to close another spat. As bad as brothers you two were. And now you're gone, and there's a huge hole in my company of marines, one I can't hope to see filled. The adjunct and the high mage had left. Fiddler and Bottle drew close to their fist. Fire, sir. Keneb frowned at Fiddler. Excuse me? It's the fire. The one they went through. Thinking on it, I doubt that winged lizard will be back. I can't be sure, but my feeling is we've seen the last of it. And the last of them. You said this to the adjunct? Just a feeling, sir. I'm sending Bottle out tonight to see what he can find. Bottle looked thrilled at the prospect. Let me know what he discovers, Sergeant. Immediately. Don't wait until morning. I'm not sleeping anyway. I know the feeling, sir. As soon as we get something, then. Good. Go on now. I'll see to dispersing Gessler's squad. Hold on. Why not take one now? Take your pick, Fid. Shortnose will do. He's hiding a brain behind all that gnarly bone and whatnot. Are you sure? Keneb asked. I sent him to collect four people in a specific sequence. I didn't need to repeat myself, sir. And he's a heavy? Aye, sometimes things ain't what they seem, you know. I'll have to think about that, Fiddler. All right, take him and get going. Outrider Henar Vigolf walked up the main avenue between the ordered rows of the Lethary camp. Though a horseman, the ground trembled slightly with each step he took, and there was little debate as to who was the tallest, biggest soldier in Bryce's army. He drew curious stares as he made his way to HQ. He wasn't astride his huge horse, after all, and not riding at a torrid pitch, making people scatter as was his habit. Thus, seeing him on foot was shocking in itself, quite apart from the fact that he was striding into the heart of the encampment. Henar Vigolf hated crowds. He probably hated people. Could be he hated the world. Trailing two steps behind him was Lance Corporal Odinid, who was attached to the commander's staff as a message-bearer. This was his sole task these days, finding soldiers and dragging them back to Bryce Bedict. The commander was conducting intensive and extensive interviews, right through the whole army. Odinid had heard that for the most part Bryce was asking about the wastelands, collecting rumours, old tales, wispy legends. The most extraordinary thing of all, when it came to these interviews, was Bryce Bedict's uncanny ability to remember names and faces. At day's end, he would call in a scribe and recount for her a complete and detailed list of those soldiers and support staff he'd spoken with that day. He would give ages, places of birth, military history, even family details such as he had gleaned, and he would add notes on whatever each soldier knew or thought they knew about the wastelands. The Bedict brothers, Odinid concluded, were probably not even human. Probably both god-touched. Hadn't Bryce returned from the dead? And hadn't he been the only one, until that Tarthanal, to have defeated the Emperor of 1,000 deaths? Henar Vigolf had been summoned for an interview, but this time there was more to it, or so Odinid suspected. An officer from the Bone Hunters had ridden into camp early this morning. Something had happened. Odinid didn't rank high enough to be able to lounge around in the HQ tent, and the commander's inner circle were a close-mouthed lot, one and all. Whatever the news had been, it had stalled the march, probably until noon, and the Malazan was still there, in a private meeting with Bryce and his cedar. Odinid had seen them himself when he'd been summoned in and told to head to the Outriders and bring back Henar Vigolf. Or, had said Bryce, I think he is so named, the tall one, the one with Blue Rose ancestry. Has in his train about 10 specially bred horses strong enough to carry him. A family of horse breeders, I seem to recall. And the man slept on his right and pissed standing on one leg. Yes, that's him all right. The added thought made Odinid smile. God-touched. Bryce hadn't even interviewed Henar yet. They reached the front entrance to the command tent. Hennar halted, ignoring the lone guard standing beside the flap as he turned to Odinid.
Do you announce me?
No, just go in, Outrider.
Hennar had to duck, something that never put him in a good mood. There were reasons for living out in the open, good ones, and even these flimsy walls of canvas and now silk seemed to push in on him. He was forced to deepen his breathing, struggling to beat down the panic rising within him. Two other aides waved him through to the inner chambers. He tried not to see them once the gestures were made. Walls were miserable enough. People crowded inside the tight spaces they made, with Hennar trapped in there with them, was even worse. They were breathing his air. It was all he could do not to snap both their necks. That was the problem with armies, too many people. Even the relatively open camp with its berms and corner fortlets and widely spaced tent rows could instill in him a wild desperation. When he delivered dispatches into such camps, he rode like a madman, just to push through and deliver the message and then get the damned out as quickly as possible. He made his way down a too narrow passage and stepped through a cloying slit in the silks to find himself in a larger room, the ceiling peaked and morning sunlight making the air glow. Commander Bryce sat in a folding chair, the Atreceda Aranect standing on his left. Seated in another chair was the Malazan officer, her legs folded, showing him a solid, muscled thigh. His eyes followed the sweeping curve of its underside, and all at once his breathing steadied. A moment later, his gaze lifted to her face. Bryce waited for the huge man's attention to return to him. It didn't. Hennar Vigolf was staring at Lostara Yil as if he'd never before seen a woman. Granted, a beautiful woman in this instance, even so. He cleared his throat. Outrider Hennar Vigolf, thank you for coming. The man's eyes flicked to Bryce and then back again.
As ordered, sir.
If I could have your attention? Good. You were attached to the Dreen garrison during the All campaign, correct?
Yes, sir.
Liaising with the Blue Rose Lancers, the company to which you once belonged?
Yes, sir.
Bryce frowned. Well, this isn't working. Outrider, may I introduce to you Captain Lostara Yil, adjutant to the adjunct Tavare of the Bone Hunters. Captain, this is Outrider Hennar Vigolf. In the manner of Blue Rose Court etiquette, Hennar lowered himself onto one knee and bowed his head.
Captain, it is a pleasure.
Yil glanced over at Bryce with raised brows. He shook his head, equally baffled. As far as he knew, the captain wasn't noble-born and certainly not royalty. She hesitated, clearly uncomfortable, and then said, "Please rise, Hennar. Next time a salute will suffice." He straightened.
"As you command, sir."
"Now," said Bryce, "might we resume?" Hennar pulled his eyes from Lostara with obvious effort and then nodded.
"Of course, sir."
During the most recent campaign, a renegade Aul named Redmask infiltrated Dreen. Blood was shed, and in the pursuit that followed, garrison soldiers were ambushed. Is this accurate so far?
Yes, sir.
There followed reports of two demonic creatures serving as bodyguards to this Redmask.
Yes, sir. Lizards running on two legs, fast as a horse, sir. They were sighted and reported on in the campaign itself. The Atreprida included descriptions in her dispatches up to and including the first major battle. Thereafter, no messengers managed to make it back.
Do you happen to know a soldier named Pride?
No, sir.
An Aul by birth, but raised by a family in Dreen. He was old enough when taken to still remember a number of Aul legends regarding an ancient war for the land with an army of demons of similar description. The Aul were not victorious, but the war ended when the demons migrated east into the wastelands. Once enemies, then allies? It is possible. Do we know what happened to Redmask? Does he still live?
Sir, it's assumed he's dead, since the Aul are no more.
But no direct proof?
No, sir.
Thank you, Hennar Vygolf. You are dismissed.
The outrider saluted, looked once more upon Lostara Yil, and then departed. The Malazan captain blew out a breath.
Well,
please accept my apologies, said Bryce. There are somewhat fewer women in my army than there are in yours. Certainly not by policy, but Lethary women seem more inclined to pursue other professions. It may be that Hennar has not...
I take your point, Commander, if you'll forgive the interruption. Besides, it must be said that he is a most impressive man, so there is no need for you to apologize.
She uncrossed her legs and rose.
In any case, sir, the lizards he mentioned certainly seemed to fit with descriptions of Kachain Chimal. These were living specimens, not undead.
There was no evidence to suggest that they were anything but alive. In the first battle, they took wounds. Lostara nodded.
Then Quick Ben is probably right.
He is. Bryce leaned back, regarded the tall woman for a moment, and then said, There was a god once. I know its name, but that isn't particularly relevant now. What is relevant is where it dwelt, in the lands we now call the Wastelands. It lived there, and it died there. Its life was stolen from it by a force, a power coming from the Kachain Chimal. A civilization, by the way, that I'd never heard of, but in that god's memories there are the name itself and scattered images. He shook his head, and after a moment continued. It may be that this power, and he glanced over at Aranikt for a moment, is one of these warrens you Malazans have brought to us. Or it could have been a ritual of some sort. Its name was Akrast Korvalain. What it did, Captain, was steal the life force of the land itself. In fact, it may well have created the wastelands, and in so doing it killed the spirits and gods dwelling there, and with them their worshippers.
Interesting. The adjunct needs to hear all of this.
Yes, we must pool our knowledge as best we can. Please, Captain, can you ride to the adjunct and inform her that we will be paying her a visit?
At once, Commander. How soon?
Let us make it the midday meal.
I had best go then, sir.
And she saluted. Bryce smiled.
No need for that in here, Captain.
Oh, on your way out, could you please tell one of my aides to get in here?
Of course. Until noon, then, Commander.
After she had left the chamber, Bryce gestured to the now empty chair. Sit down, Atreseda. You look a little pale. She hesitated and then relented. He watched her settle nervously on the chair's edge.
Well, it's a start.
There was a scuffing sound at the room's flap, and then Corporal Ginast entered and stood at attention.
Corporal, attach Hennar Vygolf to my staff. Furthermore, he is to accompany my entourage when I attend a lunch today at the Malazan camp. Issue him the appropriate cloak and inform him he is now a lance corporal.
Excuse me, Commander, but isn't Vygolf Blue Rose?
He is. What of it?
Well, military regulations state that no Blue Rose-born soldier is eligible for any officer's rank in the regular Lethary forces, sir. Only among the Blue Rose Lancers can a Blue Rose-born soldier ascend in rank, and even there only to that of lieutenant. It was written into the capitulation agreement following the conquest of Blue Rose, sir.
The same agreement that demanded horses and stirrups from the Blue Rose, not to mention the creation of the Lancers themselves?
Yes, sir.
And the stirrups they sent us were rubbish, weren't they?
A nasty trick, sir, that one. I'm surprised the king has not insisted on proper reparations.
You are most welcome to your surprise, Ginast, but not to your disapproving tone. As far as those stirrups are concerned, I admit to applauding the Blue Rose in their deviousness. Revenge most deserved. As for the ceiling on advancement in the Lethary army, I have this to say. From now on, any and every soldier in the Lethary army, no matter where they originally come from, has equal opportunity for advancement based on merit and exemplary service to the kingdom. Bring in a scribe, and we'll get that written up immediately. As for you, Ginast, Best hurry, since you need to track Hennar down in time for him to return here, mounted and ready as my escort. Understood?
Sir, the highborn officers will not like...
I understand the Malazan Empress conducted a campaign that scoured her armies of those ranks bought by privilege and station. Do you know how she went about it, Corporal? She arrested the officers and either executed them or sent them to work in mines for the rest of their lives. A most charming solution, I think, and should the noble-born in my forces prove at all troublesome, I might well advise my brother to adopt something similar. Now you are dismissed. The aide saluted and then fled. Bryce glanced over to see shock on Aranik's face. Oh, come now, Atreseda. You don't really think I'd suggest such a thing, do you?
Sir? No, of course not. I mean, it wasn't that. Well, sorry, sir. Sorry.
Bryce cocked his head and regarded her for a moment. What then? Ah, you are perhaps surprised that I'd indulge in a little matchmaking, Atreseda?
Yes, sir. A little.
That was the first hint of life I've seen in Captain Yill's face since I first met her. As for Hennar, why, he seems man enough for her, don't you think?
Oh, yes, sir. I mean...
He clearly has a taste for the exotic. Do you think he stands a chance?
Sir, I wouldn't know.
As a woman, rather, what think you? Her eyes were darting, her colour high.
She saw him admiring her legs, sir.
And made no move to cover up.
I'd noticed that, sir.
Me too. There was silence then in the chamber as Bryce studied Aranikt, while she in turn endeavoured to look everywhere but at her commander. For the errant's sake, Atreseda, make use of the rest of that chair, will you? Sit back.
Yes, sir.
Throat Slitter's high-pitched laugh cut across from behind the captain's tent. Again. Wincing, Cuttle leaned over and dragged close his studded hauberk. No point in crawling into the thing until they were finally ready to march, but it was getting patchy, needing some grease.
"Where's the rend pail?"
"Here," said Tar, collecting the small bucket and passing it over.
"Don't take too much. We're getting low, and now that Paws is in charge of the quartermasters..." "The bastard ain't in charge of nothing," Cuttle snapped. "He's just set himself up as a middleman, and we all choke our way through him to get anything. Quartermaster's happy since so few requests ever reach him, and between the two of them, they're hoarding and worse. Someone should tell Sort so she can tell Kindly so he can..."
"Kindly's got nothing to do with Paws anymore, Cuttle."
"So who does?"
"Nobody, as far as I can tell." Smiles and Corrick trudged back into the camp, which wasn't much of a camp anymore, just a smouldering hearth and a ring of kit packs and gear.
"First bell afternoon," said Smiles, "and no sooner."
"Any other word on Guess and Stormy?" Cuttle asked her. "Fid can say what he wants," said Corrick, "and same for the others. They probably bolted." "Don't be an idiot," retorted Cuttle. "Veterans don't walk. That's what makes them veterans. Until they decide they've had enough."
"Go ask Bottle," said Tar, his face darkening as he glared at Corrick, "and he'll tell you the same. They got snatched."
"Fine, they got snatched. Point is, they're gone. Probably dead by now. Who's next?"
"With luck," said Smiles, slumping down to lean against her pack. "You, Corrick."
She looked over to Tar.
"His brain is burnt out. Corrick ain't the Corrick I once knew, and I bet you're all thinking the same."
She was on her feet again.
"Piss on this. I'm going for a walk."
"Take your time," said Corrick.
Another piping laugh from Throat Slitter. Cuttle scowled.
"What's so fucking funny?"
Korab had been sleeping or pretending to sleep, and now he sat up.
"I'll go find out, Cuttle. It's getting on my nerves, too."
"If he's being a bastard, Korab, punch his face in."
"Aye, Cuttle. Count on it."
Cuttle paused to watch him tramp off. He grinned over at Tar.
"Catch all that?"
"I'm sitting right here."
"He ain't on the outside of us no more, is he? He's our heavy. That's good.
So he is, and so it is, said Tar. I'm this squad's heavy, said Coric.
Tar resumed lacing his boots. Cuttle looked away and ran a hand through what was left of his hair, and then realized that the hand was thick with grease.
Hood's breath!
Tar looked over and snorted. Won't keep it from cracking, he said.
What?
Your skull?
Funny.
Coric stood as if he didn't know where to go, as if he no longer belonged anywhere. After a moment, he walked off in a direction opposite to the one Smiles had taken. Cuttle resumed rubbing down his hauberk. When he needed more grease, he collected it from the top of his head.
He might, you know.
He won't, Tar replied.
Gessler and Stormy, they're his excuse. That and Kissware.
Kissware didn't care about anybody but Kissware.
And Coric does? Used to, maybe. But now he's all inside his own head. And in there, it's as Smiles says, burnt up, nothing but cinders.
He won't run.
Why are you so sure, Tar?
Because somewhere inside, in all those ashes, something remains. He still has something to prove. Not to himself, he can convince himself of anything. But to all of us, like it or not, admit it or not, he's stuck.
We'll see, I guess.
Tar reached over and collected some grease from Cuttle's temple. He started rubbing down his boots.
Funny,
said Cuttle. Korab walked round the command tent to find throat slitter, widdershins, and dead smell crouched in a huddle just beyond the latrine trench. He made his way over.
Stop that laughing, throat slitter, or I'll have to bash your face in.
The three men looked over guiltily. Scowling, throat slitter said,
Like to see you try, soldier.
No, you wouldn't. What are you doing?
Playing with scaled rats. What's it to you?
Korab edged closer and peered down. Three of the scrawny things were struggling in the grass, their tails tied together.
That's not a nice thing to do.
Idiot,
said Widdershins.
We're going to eat them for lunch. We're just making sure they don't go nowhere. You're torturing them.
Go away, Korab,
said Throat Slitter.
Not until you either untie their tails or snap their necks.
Throat Slitter sighed.
Explain it to him, Dead Smell.
They ain't got brains, Korab. Just ooze, like pus in those tiny skulls. They're like termites or ants. They can only do any thinking if there's lots of them. Looks like three ain't enough. Besides, they stink of something, like magic, only oilier. Me and Wid were trying to figure it out, so leave us alone, will you?
We're eating greasy magic? Korab asked. That sounds bad. I'm not eating those things anymore.
Then pretty soon you're gonna go hungry,
Widdershin said, reaching down to flip one of the scaled rats onto its back. The other two attempted to drag it away, but chose opposite directions.
There's millions of these things out here. Hood knows what they live on. We saw a swarm of them this morning, like a glittering river. Killed about 50 before the rest took off.
The flipped-over rat managed to right itself, and once more the three were all pulling in different directions.
More and more of them, every day. Like maybe they're following us.
The notion chilled Korab, though he wasn't sure why. It wasn't as though the rats could do anything. They didn't even seem to be going for their food supplies.
I heard they got a nasty bite.
If you let them, I, said Dead Smell.
So, Throat Slitter, they stopped being funny?
Aye, now go.
'Cause if I hear another laugh, I ain't coming back to talk.
It's just a laugh, Korab. People got 'em, right? All kinds.
But yours makes the skin crawl.
Good, since it's how I sound when I slit some bastard's useless throat.
Korab stepped between Widdershins and Dead Smell, reached down and snatched up the three rats. In quick succession, he broke their necks, then dropped the tangled bodies between the three men.
Next time you hear me laugh, growled Throat Slitter.
Fine, Korab replied. Only I don't need a single breath to cut off your damned head, throat slitter, so that laugh will be your last.
He headed off. This was getting ugly. Whatever happened to glory? Used to be this army, for all its miseries, had some dignity. Made being a bone hunter mean something, something worthwhile. But lately it was just a mob of bored bullies and thugs.
Korab?
He looked up, found Faradan's sword blocking his path.
Captain?
Fiddler back with you yet?
Don't think so. He wasn't there a quarter bell ago.
Where's your squad?
They ain't moved, sir.
He jerked a thumb backward.
Just over there.
Then where are you going?
Somewhere, nowhere, sir.
Frowning, she marched past him. He wondered if she expected him to follow. She was heading to his squad mates, after all. But since she didn't say anything and just continued on, he shrugged and resumed his aimless wandering.
Maybe find the heavies again. Throw some bones. But then why? I always lose. Korab's famous luck don't run to dice. Typical. Never the important stuff.
He rested his hand on the pommel of his new leathery sword, just to confirm he still had it.
And I ain't gonna lose it, neither. Not this one. It's my sword, and I'm gonna use it from now on.
He'd been thinking about Leoman lately. No real reason, as far as he could tell, except maybe it was the way Leoman had managed to lead soldiers, turn them into fanatical followers, in fact. He'd once believed that was a gift, a talent. But now he was no longer so sure. In some ways, that gift was the kind that made a man dangerous. Being a follower was risky, especially when the truth showed up, that truth being that the one doing the leading didn't really care a whit for any of them. Leoman and people like him collected fanatics the way a rich merchant collected coins, and then he spent them without a moment's thought. No, the adjunct was better, no matter what everyone said. They talked as if they wanted a Leoman, but Korab knew how that was. They didn't. If they got a Leoman, every one of them would end up getting killed. He believed the adjunct cared about them, maybe even too much, but between the two, he'd stay with her every time. Dissatisfaction was a disease. It had ignited the whirlwind, and hundreds of thousands had died. Standing over grave pits, who was satisfied? Nobody. It had launched the Malazans into eating their own, and if every Wiccan was now dead, who'd be so foolish as to believe the new land the settlers staked out for themselves wouldn't exact its vengeance? Sooner or later, it would turn them into dust, and the wind would just blow them away. Even here, in this camp, among the bone hunters, dissatisfaction spread like an infection. No reason but boredom and not knowing. What was so bad about that? Boredom meant nobody was getting chopped up. Not knowing was the truth of life itself. His heart could burst in the next step, or a runaway horse could trample him down at the intersection just ahead. A blood vessel in his skull could explode. A rock could come down out of the sky. Everything was about not knowing, the whole future. And who could even make sense enough of the past to think they really knew everything, and so, knowing everything, know everything to come?
Dissatisfied? See if this punch in the face makes you feel any better.
Aye, Cuttle was a sour one, but Korab was starting to like him. Maybe he complained a lot, but that wasn't the same as being dissatisfied. Clearly, Cuttle liked being able to complain. He'd be lost without it. That was why, no matter what, he looked comfortable, rubbing grease into boiled leather, honing his short sword and the heads of his crossbow bolts. Counting and counting again his small collection of sharpers and smokers, his one cracker, his eyes straying to Fid's pack in which was hidden at least one cusser. The man was happy. You could tell by his scowl.
I like Cuttle. I know what to expect with him. He ain't hot iron, he ain't cold iron. He's bitter iron. Me too. Bitter and getting bitterer. Just try me, throat slitter.
Captain Kindly ran a hand through the last few threads of hair on his head and leaned back in his folding chair.
Scannero, what can I do for you?
It's Ruthan.
Of course it is. Hardly a secret, Scannero.
Not that.
Well, some of that. Thing is, he's not what I think he is.
Early days, isn't it?
I don't think he's using his real name.
Who is? Look at me. I earned mine over years of diligent deliberation. Now, even Scannero isn't what most people think, is it? Archaic Canese for a female hill dog, I believe.
Not like that, kindly. He's hiding something. Oh, his story works out, at least on the surface. I mean, his timeline makes sense.
Excuse me, his what?
Well, when he did what and where he did it. A proper course of events. But I figure that just means he's worked it out to sound plausible.
Or it sounds plausible because it is, in fact, his history.
I don't think so. That's just it, kindly. I think he's lying.
Scannero, even if he is, that's hardly a crime in the Malazan military, is it?
It is if there's a price on his head. If, say, the Claw get wet dreams thinking about killing him, or the Empress has 1,000 spies out there looking for him.
For Ruthen God?
For whoever he really is.
And if they are, does it even matter now, Scannero? We're all renegades these days.
The Claw has a long memory.
What's left of them after Malaz City? I think they'd save all their venom for the adjunct and all of us traitorous officers of significance. Heroic veterans such as myself, not to mention the Fists, barring perhaps Blistig. Presumably, he continued, you are thinking in the long term. The two of you settling down somewhere, a house overlooking the Canese beaches, perhaps, with smoke rising from the chimney and a brood of bearded offspring playing with fire ants and whatnot. For what it is worth, Scannero, I believe you will face no challenge in sleeping peacefully at night.
I'm beginning to understand how Lieutenant Pawes felt when serving under you kindly. It all slides past, doesn't it?
I'm not sure I know what you mean.
Right, she drawled. Consider this. Ruthen's getting nervous, and it's getting worse. He's just about combed his beard off his chin. He has troubled dreams. He speaks in his sleep, in languages I've never heard before.
Most curious.
For example, have you ever heard of Akrast Korvalain? Kindly frowned.
Can't say I have. But it sounds tist. For example, the elder warrens of Kurald Galain and Emerlan. Similar constructions, I'd wager. You might mention it to the High Mage.
She sighed, looked away. Right. Well, I'd best get back to my squads. The loss of Gessler and Stormy so soon after Massan lit out, and that other one, well, things are fragile at the moment.
That they are, Scannero. On your way out, have Corporal Thews bring in my collection.
Your collection?
Combs, Scannero. Combs.
Master Sergeant Pawes sat up, wiping the blood from his nose. Strange motes still floated and drifted in front of his eyes, but he could see that his personal wagon of stores had been ransacked. The two oxen harnessed to it were watching him as they gnawed on their bits. He wondered briefly if it was possible to train oxen as guard dogs, but the image of the beasts baring giant square teeth and moaning in a threatening fashion struck him as not quite frightening enough. As he was picking himself up, brushing dirt and grass from his clothes, the sound of approaching footsteps made him flinch and then straighten, raising his hands defensively. But there was no need. The newcomers didn't look particularly threatening. Hedge, and behind him, four of his bridge burners.
What happened to you?
Hedge asked.
Not sure, I'm afraid. Someone came by with a requisition I was, unable to fill.
Wrong wax seal on the request?
Something like that.
Hedge eyed the wagon.
Looks like he went and took what he wanted anyway.
Capital offence, said one of Hedge's corporals, shaking his head and frowning as if in disbelief. You bone hunters lack discipline, Master Sergeant.
Pawes stared at the scrawny Lethary.
You know, I was just thinking the same thing, Corporal. It's anarchy here. I truly feel under siege, a lone island of reason and order in a storm of rapacious chaos."
He gestured behind him and said to Hedge,
"If you're here to request anything, as you can see, you will have to wait until I reorganize things. Besides, my own supplies are not, strictly speaking, available for official restitution. I can, however, provide you with a writ giving you an audience with the quartermaster."
"Kind of you," said Hedge. "Only we already been there."
"Without a writ? You had no joy, did you?"
"No, funny that. Seems the only writs he's looking at are the ones from you."
"Of course," said Paws. "As you might imagine, Commander, it is Commander, isn't it? As you might imagine, in the midst of the very chaos your corporal so sharply observed, it has been necessary to take it upon myself to enforce some measure of control on our dwindling supplies." Hedge was nodding, eyes still on the wagon.
"Thing is, Master Sergeant, what we're hearing is that most of the chaos is due to the fact that everyone has to go through you. Now, I'm wondering if Fist Kenneb is fully aware of the situation. As a commander, you see, I can just go straight and talk to him, as equals, I mean. None of your cronies to try to get through. I marked him in that unofficial cordon round the HQ camp. Quite the organization you put together, Master Sergeant. Makes me wonder who got through to rearrange your nose like that."
"If I had memory of the incident, Commander, I'd tell you who. At least after I'd hunted him down and crucified him for looting."
"Well," said Hedge, "I caught a rumor not 50 paces from here. It's fresh as that dung behind them oxen."
"Splendid." Paws waited.
"About that writ," Hedge said.
"Coming right up. Let me just find a spare wax tablet."
"Not using parchment?" "No, of course not. Parchment doesn't melt, does it? Wax does. Evidence? What evidence?" "Clever, Master Sergeant."
Paws found a tablet and a stylus from his small portable desk close to the toppled-over folding chair where he'd presumably been sitting when the fist said hello. He quickly scratched his symbol and then looked up expectantly.
"What is it you want, specifically?"
"Specifically? Whatever we decide we need."
"Right, excellent. I'll write that right here."
"Make it legible and all."
"Naturally."
Paws handed the tablet over, waited while Hedge squinted at it. Finally, the bastard looked up and smiled.
"Rumour is, it was Nefarious Bread who done cracked you one."
"Oh, him. Who else would it be? How silly of me. I don't suppose you know what he looks like."
Hedge shrugged.
"Big, I heard. Got a brow like a rock shelf. A hamster's eyes, a nose spread from here to Malaz Island, and he can crush rocks with his teeth. More hair than a bull bedarin's dangly sack. Knuckles that can bust a master sergeant's nose."
"You can stop there," said Paws. "I have an amazingly precise picture in my head now, thank you."
"Mayfly says that's all wrong, though," Hedge added. "Bread's tall but skinny," says Mayfly, "and his whole face is tiny, like the bud of a flower, with sweet and pleasant eyes and pouty lips."
"And Mayfly dreams about him every night, aye. Well, this has been a wonderful conversation, Commander. Is our business finished? As you can see, I have some work to do here."
"So you do, so you do."
He and the oxen watched them leave. Then he sighed.
"Gods, they really are bridge burners." He glared at the oxen. "Chew on that some, you useless oafs."
Skulldeath, last surviving prince of some Seven Cities desert tribe and the most frightening melee killer Sergeant Center had ever seen, was plaiting Ruffles' hair. The style was markedly different from anything the Dalhon tribes favored, but on Ruffles' round and somewhat small head, the effect was, to Cinta's eyes, somewhere between functional and terrifying.
"Leak it at,"
muttered Nepfurrow, his blotched brow wrinkling into folds that reminded her of turtle skin.
Disgusting!
I don't know, interjected Primly. Those curls will be all the padding she needs under her helm. Should keep her a lot cooler than the rest of us.
Nabbit furl, skein dath rapizzi, a girl.
Nice rhyme, offered Sholey from where he lounged, legs stretched out and boots edging the still smouldering coals of the hearth. The heavy's hands were laced behind his head and his eyes were closed. Cinta and the other half-dozen soldiers seated close by occasionally glanced over to check on progress. Through a flurry of hand signals, bets had been laid on when Sholey would finally notice he was cooking his feet. Corporal Rim was doing the 10 count, and he'd already reached 60. Ruffles' now ubiquitous pipe was puffing smoke into Skulldeath's eyes, and he had to keep wiping them as he worked his wooden plug and bone hook. Strange, mused Cinta, how it was misfits always found each other in any crowd, or, in this case, wilderness. Like those savannah grass spiders that dangled finger-long feelers out in front of them in the mating season. Catching herself thinking about spiders again, for perhaps the fifth time since the morning, she looked over at the recumbent, motionless form of Sergeant Hellion, who'd stumbled into their camp thinking it belonged to her own squad. She was so drunk, Rim kept her from getting too close to the fire, lest the air round her should ignite. She'd been running from the spiders. What spiders? Hellion didn't explain. Instead, she'd toppled. Skulldeath had looked her over for a time, stroking her hair and making sure none of her limbs were pinned at odd angles, and when at last he fell asleep, it was curled up against her.
The mother he never had, or the mother he never left. Well, all those lost princes in fairy tales ain't nearly as lost as Skulldeath here. What a sad, if confused, story he'd make, our sweet little boy.
Cinta rubbed at her face. She wasn't feeling much different from Hellion, though she'd had nothing but weak ale to drink the night before. Her mind felt bludgeoned, bruised into numbness. Her haunting sensitivities had vanished, making her feel half deaf.
I think I am overwhelmed by something. It's close. It's getting closer. Is that what this is?
She wondered where her sister was by now. How far away were the Perish and Cundrill anyway? They were overdue, weren't they? Cinta thought back to her fateful audience with the adjunct. She remembered Masangilani's fierce expression the moment before the adjunct sent her off. There had been no hesitation in Tavare's response to what Cinta said what was needed, and not a single objection to any one of her suggestions. The only visible reaction had preceded all that.
Betrayal. Yes, that word hurt her. It's the one thing she cannot face, the one thing, I think, that devours her courage. What happened to you, Tavare Paran? Was it something in your childhood, some terrible rejection, a betrayal that stabbed to the deepest core of you, of the innocent child you once were? When does it happen, all those wounds that ended up making us the adults we are?
A child starved never grows tall or strong. A child unloved can never find love or give it when grown. A child that does not laugh will become someone who can find nothing in the world to laugh at, and a child hurt deeply enough will spend a lifetime trying to scab that wound, even as they ceaselessly pick at it. She thought of all the careless acts and indifferent, impatient gestures she'd seen among parents in civilized places, as if they had no time for their own children. Too busy, too full of themselves, and all of that was simply passed on to the next generation, over and over again. Among the Dalhanese, in the villages of both the north and the south, patience was the gift returned to the child who was itself a gift. Patience, the full weight of regard, the willingness to listen and the readiness to teach, were these not the responsibilities of parenthood? And what of a civilization that could thrive only by systematically destroying that precious relationship?
Time to spend with your children? No time. Work to feed them, yes, that is your responsibility. But your loyalty and your strength and your energy, they belong to us. And we? Who are we? We are the despoilers of the world. Whose world? Yours? Hers? The adjunct's, aye. and even Skulldeath's, poor lost Skulldeath, and Hellion, ever bathed in the hot embrace of alcohol. You and that wandering ex-priest with his smirk and broken eyes. Your armies, your kings and queens, your gods, and most of all, your children. We kill their world before they even inherit it. We kill it before they grow old enough to know what it is.
She rubbed at her face again. The adjunct was so alone, aye.
But I tried. I think I did, anyway. You're not quite as alone as you think, Tavare Paran. Did I leave you with that much? When I was gone, when you stood there in your tent, in the silence, when Lastari Yil left and not one set of eyes was upon you, what did you do? What did you free from chains inside yourself? If Bottle watched through the eyes of one of his rats, what did he see, there in your face? Anything? Anything at all?
What's burning?
You are surely.
The heavy made no move. His boots were now peeling off black threads of smoke.
Am I done yet, Primly?
Crispy bacon, I'd wager.
Gods, I love bacon.
You gonna move your feet, Shirley?
Malvern Dredder demanded.
Got bids, all you bastards?
Of course, said Pravalak Rim.
Who's counting tens?
I am, said Rim. But in order, doing rounds. We got 10 in all, counting Skulldeath and Ruffle, though they ain't counted in personally, being busy and all.
Cinter bet?
Aye,
said Cinter.
What number?
7.
Rim, where you at now?
3.
Out loud.
5, 6, set.
Sholi pulled his feet from the fire and sat up.
Now that's loyalty,
Cinter said, grinning.
Dien fear, Aid farv, erim dien fear.
It's Sholi's feet, said Malvern. He can do what he wants with them. Cinter wins the pot, cause she's so pretty, right, Sholi?
The man smiled.
Right. Now, Cint, you like me?
By half, she replied.
I need it. Nep furrow, what'll a quick heel cost me?
Ha! Your half! Your half! Ha ha!
Half of my half.
Nad!
It's either that or the sergeant orders you to heal me and you get nothing.
Good point,
said Cinter, glancing over to Badan Grok.
Got need for your healer, Badan. You all right with that?
Of course, he replied.
This was all a setup, Primly muttered. I'm smelling more than bacon right now.
Arf ad yar arf, Shubly! Arf ad yar arf!
Be kind to him, Sholi, so he does you a good job.
Aye, Sergeant Cinder. Half of half, agreed. Where's the kitty?
Everybody spill now, said Rim, collecting a helm. In here, pass it around.
Scam, said Drawfirst. Look back, we all been taken. What's new about that? Marines never play fair.
They just play to win,
Drawfirst finished, scowling at the old bridge-burner adage. Cinter rose and walked from the camp, numb and restless at the same time. What kind of state was that to be in? After a few strides, she realized she had company and glanced over to see Badan Grok.
Cinter, you look different. Sick? Listen, kiss where?
Never mind my sister, Badan. I know her best, remember?
Exactly. She was going to run. We all knew it. You must have known it too. What I don't get is that she didn't try to get us to go with her.
Cinter glanced at him.
Would she have convinced you, Badan?
Maybe.
And then the two of you would have ganged up on me until I relented.
Could be like that, aye. Point is, it didn't happen. And now she's somewhere and we're stuck here.
I'm not deserting, Badan.
Ain't you thought about it, though? Going after Kiswere?
No.
Really?
She's all grown up now. I should have seen that long ago, don't you think? I don't have to take care of her anymore. Wish I'd realized that the day she joined up.
He grimaced.
You ain't the only one, Cinter.
Ah, Badan, what am I to do with you? You keep breaking my heart. But pity and love don't live together, do they? Was it pity? She just didn't know. Instead, she took his hand as they walked. The soft wind on his face woke him. Groggy, thick-tongued and parched, Gessler blinked open his eyes. Blue sky, empty of birds, empty of everything. He groaned, struggling to work out the last thing he remembered. Camp, aye. Some damned argument with Stormy. The bastard had been dreaming again. Some demonic fist coming down out of the dark sky. He'd had the eyes of a hunted hare. Did they drink? Smoke something? Or just fall back to sleep? Him on one side of the tent, Stormy on the other. One side neat and ordered, the other a stinking mess. Had he been complaining about that? He couldn't remember a damned thing. No matter. The camp wasn't moving for some reason, and it was strangely quiet, too. And what was he doing outside? He slowly sat up.
Gods below! They left us behind!
A stretch of broken ground, odd low mounds in the distance. Had they been there last night? And where were the hearths, the makeshift berms? He heard a scuffling sound behind him and twisted round, the motion rocking the brain in his skull fierce enough to make him gasp. A woman he'd never seen before was crouched at a small fire. Just to her right was Stormy, still asleep. Weapons and their gear were stacked just beyond him. Gessler squinted at the stranger. Dressed like some damned savage, all colourless gum-gnawed deer hide and bedder in leather. She wasn't a young thing either, maybe 40. But it was never easy to tell with plainsfolk, for that she surely was, like an old-fashioned seti. Her features were regular enough. She'd probably been good-looking once, but the years had been hard since then. When his assessing gaze finally lifted to her dark brown eyes, he found her studying him with something like sorrow.
"Better start talking,"
Gessler said. He saw a waterskin and pointed at it. She nodded. Gessler reached over, tugged loose the stopper and drank down three quick mouthfuls. An odd flavour came off his lips, and his head spun momentarily.
Good knocker! What did I do last night?
He glared at the woman.
You understanding me?
Trader tongue, she said.
It was a moment before he comprehended her words. Her accent was one he'd never heard before.
Good. There's that at least. Where am I? Who are you? Where's my damned army?
She gestured. Gone. And then said,
"You are for me, with me, by me?"
She shook her head, clearly frustrated with her limited knowledge of the language.
"Calith, my name."
Her eyes shifted away.
"Destriant Calith."
"Destriant? That's not a title people just throw around. If it doesn't belong to you, you and your whole damned line are cursed, forevermore. You don't use titles like that. Destriant to what god?"
"God, no. No god. Kachain Chemal. Asil Nest. Matron Gansan Asil. Kalith me. Elan."
He raised a hand.
"Hold it, hold it. I'm not understanding much of that. Kachain Chemal, aye. You're a destriant to the Kachain Chemal. But that can't be. You got it wrong."
"Wrong, no. I wish, yes."
She shifted slightly and pointed at Stormy.
"He shield anvil."
Then she pointed at Gessler.
"You mortal sword."
"We ain't."
And Gessler trailed off, gaze straying over to Stormy.
"Someone called him shield anvil once, I think. Can't recall who it was, though. Actually, maybe it was mortal sword, come to that."
He glared at her.
"Whoever it was, though, it wasn't no Kachain Chemal."
She shrugged.
"There is war. You lead, him and you. Gansan Asil send me to find you. I find you. You are fire. Gorol see you, fill my head with you. Burning, beacons, you and him, blinding. Gorol collect you."
"Collect?" Gessler abruptly stood, earning yet another gasp as his head reeled.
"You snatched us!"
"Me not. Not me. Gorol.
Who is Garul? Where is the bastard? I got to cut his throat and maybe yours too. Then we can try to find the army.
Gone. Your army many leagues away. Garul fly all night with you. All night. You must lead Kachain Chemal army. 8 Furies coming now. Close. There is war.
Gessler walked over and kicked Stormy. The big man grunted and then clutched the sides of his head.
Go piss yourself, Gess, he mumbled. It ain't morning yet.
Really?
Stormy had spoken in Falarian, so Gessler did the same.
Bugle wakes me every time, you know that. Miserable shit.
Open your eyes, soldier! On your damned feet!
Stormy lashed out with one bare foot, forcing Gessler back a step. He'd felt those kicks before, but Stormy then sat, eyes open and widening as he looked around.
What did you do to me, Gess? Where's everything?
We got ourselves kidnapped last night, Stormy.
Stormy's bright blue eyes fixed on Kallis.
Huh? She's stronger than she looks?
Fenner's sake, Stormy, she had help. Someone named Garul, and whoever he is, he's got wings, and he's strong enough to have carried us away all night.
Stormy's eyes flashed.
What did I tell you, Gessler? My dreams! I saw...
What you said you saw made no sense. Still doesn't. The point is, this woman here calls herself the Destriant to the Kachain Chemal, and if that's not dumb enough, she's calling me the Mortal Sword and you the Shield Anvil.
Stormy flinched, hands up, covering his face. He spoke behind his palms.
Where's my sword? Where's my boots? Where the fuck is breakfast?
Didn't you hear me?
I heard you, Gessler. Dreams. It was those damned scaled rats. Every time I saw one on the trail, I got the shivers.
Rats ain't Kachain Chemal. You know, if you had even half a brain, maybe you could have figured out your dreams and maybe we wouldn't be in this mess.
Stormy dropped his hands, swung his shaggy head to regard Kallis.
Look at her, he muttered.
What about her?
Reminds me of my mother.
Gessler's hands twitched, closed into fists.
Don't even think it, Stormy.
Can't help it. She does.
No, she doesn't. Your mother had red hair.
Not the point. Around her eyes. See it? You should know, Gess. You went and bedded her enough times.
That was an accident.
A what?
I mean, how did I know she went around seducing your friends?
She didn't. Just you.
But you said...
So I lied. I was just trying to make you feel better.
No, fuck that. I was trying to make you feel that you're nobody important. Your head's swelled up bad enough as it is.
Anyway, it don't matter anymore, does it? Forget it. I forgave you, remember?
You were drunk and we just trashed an alley trying to kill each other.
Then I forgave you. Forget it, I said.
I wish I could. Now you go and say this one looks like...
But she does.
I know she does. Now just shut the fuck up. We ain't...
Yes, we are. You know it, Gess. You don't like it, but you know it. We been cut loose. We got us a destiny. Right here, right now. She's Destriant, and you're Shield Anvil, and I'm Mortal Sword.
Wrong way round, Gessler snarled. I'm the Mortal Sword.
Good. Glad we got that settled. Now, get her to cook us something.
Oh, is that what Destriants do then? Cook for us?
I'm hungry, and I got no food.
Then ask her, politely.
Stormy scowled at Kallis.
Traitor tongue,
Gessler said. Instead, Stormy pointed at his mouth and then patted his stomach. Kallis said,
You'll eat.
Hungry, aye.
Food,
she said, nodding, and then pointed to a small leather satchel to one side. Gessler laughed. Kallis then rose.
They come.
Who come?
Gessler asked.
Kachain Chemal, army. Soon, war.
At that moment, Gessler felt the trembling ground underfoot. Stormy did the same, and as one they both turned to face north.
Fenner's holy crotch!